How do we as parents, how do we as caregivers give these young people the best chance at success, the best chance to live their fullest life? And the answer is that it is a multi-tiered approach. There is many important things, starting with genetics. The brain development is influenced by inherited traits from mom and dad. But it goes to things on a daily basis like nutrition, making sure they've got proper nutrition, antioxidants, vitamins, vegetables, fruits, all of the important things to make a balanced diet. Sleep is often forgotten about. Teenagers, especially, they forget about it because their clock tells them they should go to bed later. But teens need adequate, high-quality sleep to support things like memory and learning and emotional regulation. And on the flip side of that, they also need to make sure to get up and get active. And regular exercise is so important to the cognitive function and to mental health. But then zoom out. The culture an individual finds themselves in, the socioeconomic status they find themselves in, those also play key roles. And then it's important to wrap up to talk about the relationship side of things, which we'll talk about here in just a moment. The quality of relationships amongst a teenager that they have in their life and the family dynamics that go along with those relationships, those go far and beyond so many things that we can do. So the more that we can be there and supportive and build those good family dynamics and relationships and patterns, the more healthy an individual is going to find themselves, the more advantage they are going to find amongst their peers who maybe didn't have the same opportunities. So out of curiosity, I had another poll question here. And how do you put this into action? How do you, as a parent, as a caregiver, as someone who works with kids, how do you put this into action to try to promote optimal development in a child's brain? Being more present, amazing, absolutely. Listening and validating them, absolutely. We will talk about validation here. Eating and sleeping, the creature comfort, so important. Experiences, I love to see that. Giving the kids an opportunity to see new things. Love the questions. Tell me more. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Being inquisitive, being actively engaged with your child. So important. All of these are amazing. I am really happy to see all these responses. And I think that we'll end up touching on a lot of these, making sure they get enough calories. I think that can often fall by the wayside, especially as individuals and society can kind of focus on overconsumption of calories. Making sure they get enough in the first place is so good. Healthy, exciting experiences for them. That's fantastic. Yes, love to see the more things they can find that can stimulate them, the more they can grow and learn. Yep, builds in a positive way that isn't toxic. Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to put it. Yeah, so finding ways for them to grow, finding ways for them to be supported. Amazing. That is exactly what I was hoping to hear. So, the supportive caregiver piece that I think we were just talking about here. There is something that's really key into psychological development that a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists really hang their hat on, and that's something called a moratorium, which is a period of critical is a critical aspect of healthy development in an adolescent brain. So what is this moratorium? The moratorium is a safe place that is both physical and mental, given by the caregivers for the teens to safely explore, challenge personal belief values, work on goals and try to find different roles, whether it's occupational or sexual. These are things that, again, we need, it's giving them the chance because what we want to do is we want to have this moratorium resolved. We want by the end of this for teenagers to be able to experience a healthy, reintegrated sense of self. Of what one wants to be or not to be, of one's example sex role. And in doing so, teenagers develop this self-acceptance and the fidelity to others, which is so key. And that fidelity is that ability to accept and commit to others, even where they may have ideological differences. So again, I think that we find ourselves in a very divisive society nowadays. And sometimes that we have a lot of people, young adults, full-fledged adults, who haven't really gotten that fidelity piece to it because they haven't really fully accepted themselves or they haven't been accepted themselves. So how can they put that onto other people? So the more we can help that be resolved, the greater chance the child will have to accept themselves and to accept others for just who the person that they are. But what happens if we can't resolve this identity crisis? And that can be as a result of lack of sufficient safe space, safe time, or being forced and pressured into a specific expected role. So again, not getting to explore, not getting to have that natural curiosity and kind of being pigeonholed into one thing or not being given that safe place, it can result in something called role diffusion, where this teenager is never able to reintegrate this stable sense of identity of self. So therefore, they aren't able to give some understanding and acceptance to who others are in the society. And they find themselves unsure of who they are in this world and where they fit in society. And as you can think, and as you'd think, if an individual doesn't know who they are or where they fit into the world, how are they going to find themselves happy and healthy? So how can we help do this? How can we as caregivers help co-regulate? And I use the word caregivers here because caregivers does not just include parents. It includes teachers. It includes adult mentors. Any adult in an individual's life that ends up falling into the caregiver category. So it's not just mom and dad. It could be grandma, grandpa. It could be auntie, uncle. It could be teacher at school, soccer coach. It could be therapist or psychiatrist. And what this co-regulation does is it refers to the supportive process between adults and youth. This co-regulation provides assistance and support for that optimal self-regulation through warm and responsive interactions. Warm and responsive being that key point. The structure of the optimal environment is really key, and it makes and we want to allow it to make self-regulation manageable and provide buffering against these environmental stressors. Things that can be included in this include like limiting opportunities for risk-taking behavior. So, for example, you're allowed to go over to your friend's house to a party only if you keep your location on. But at the same time, we also need to provide positive reinforcement after that to support the things that we want to see. So, for example, we provide positive praise and more freedom when the teen does what they're supposed to do with checking in and keeping their location on. And what we do know is that positive reinforcement, the addition of something that encourages behavior, is better than negative punishment. So I think the idiom, you attract more flies with honey than vinegar, really stands true in this. And again, the more we can do to support them, the more we can do to support the things we want to see, the better they're going to have an understanding of what are the right steps and how can I do that. But then also, we need to provide natural consequences for poor decisions. So, for example, they didn't keep their location on. So, I'm sorry, bud. Next time, you're not allowed to go to the party because we didn't follow through on it. What we know is the more logical the connection between the behavior and choice and the consequence, the more likely it is to stick. So if an individual didn't keep their location on and instead they get no ice cream for 2 weeks, it's going to be a harder line to draw for that kid. So again, having it more logical and more understanding, the better it's going to be. We also try to reduce the intensity of conflict in a situation. So we give them the time, the space to calm down as they need. And then we provide a safe, supportive, and responsive relationship. We provide this relationship where the youth feels safe to learn and to make mistakes. It allows them, as they navigate these bigger and bigger decisions and more challenging situations in their life, that they feel more confident. It's making decisions regarding risky behavior in the context of peer pressure, in the context of all that other things. They need to feel confident in themselves. So the more that they empower to do that at a younger age, the more it's going to stick. And then teaching self-regulation skills through modeling. Modeling is the key here. It's showing the teenager how to do it with yourself, knowing that it is possible because they are seeing it happen with their own eyes. So it's practicing skills, monitoring and reinforcing the adolescent's progress on skills, coaching them on how, why, when to use their skills, when it would be appropriate, and how to use them in these increasingly complex situations. These things can allow some buffer against high-risk behavior and really provide really positive long-term consequences because, again, they understand that there is, they've seen it happen in front of their eyes. They know what's possible. And then we try to promote in them this ability to self-regulate. Self-regulation is an ability to exert control on what they think, feel, and do. By having the self-control, it is a foundational role in promoting the well-being, and it is defined as managing thoughts and feelings to enable goal-directed actions. It contributes to more satisfying and fulfilling relationships. It facilitates accomplishments in school and vocationally. It protects us from wide arrays of psychiatric and psychological disorders. It allows this delayed gratification and a skill that continues to work over time and gain skill over time that we know was so important. And the self-regulation, though, it should be known, is developmentally balanced out during adolescence. So again, it is trying to work against a lot going on in the brain. It is fighting an uphill battle, but the more that we can do to support it, the better it is going to be. And talking about these delayer versus non-delayers, something I thought was interesting that I decided to include is delayers consistently perform better on tests. They perform higher on SATs. They went to more years of schooling. They learned better coping skills. They had better esteem, self-esteem. So again, the more they can learn and see these skills and see that it's possible from you all and be able to use it themselves, the better they're going to be. But of course, there are some things that, like adverse child experiences, that may stunt that developmental regulation. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that there's not an opportunity to continue to learn and grow and model. And then emotional regulation, I think, is one of the standalone key pillars in the field of psychology and psychiatry. And it's the function of emotions, and it allows for communication and motivation. The more we understand about why we have these emotions, the less scary they tend to be. So letting them know it's okay to feel big emotions, it's okay to feel intensely. And these big emotions can create big urges to react. But what we need to do and what we need to model is we need to learn how to ride the wave without acting. We need to be able to just go with the flow. And again, and the quote says here, you can't stop the wave, but you can learn how to surf it. You can go along with it and not get so caught up with it, not get caught in the turbulence of the wave. You're riding it. You're teaching them what comes up must come down. It's a Zen process that goes hand in hand. And when you facilitate this understanding that some reactions make situations worse. And I would hate to have you all walk away without any specific tangible skills. So I'll just go over a couple or a few here, four here. One of the big ones that I really like that makes just a lot of sense to me is opposite action. So really what it is, it's trying to figure out what is my urge telling me to do and doing the opposite. So you take a second to sit with that urge, you think about the opposite, and then you do it. So an example is that your teen did not get invited to hang out with friends at the mall. Immediately, their urge is to send them a nasty text message telling them off. But the opposite action, that thing they sat with and they tried to kind of figure out what's the opposite of this, they ended up texting their friends a friendly message, trying to create plans for another time. So again, it leaves them that opportunity to realize there is other alternatives of what could be going on. Using the STOP skill, STOP stands for stop, take a step back, observe, and proceed mindfully. So my example is that the teen got a bad grade on the test when it was returned. So stop. They freeze in that moment. They don't act reactionary and they try to label that emotion that's going in their head. Are they frustrated? Are they sad? Are they anxious? They take a step back. They pause until that big emotion has peaked, and they can do that by counting breaths in their head. They then observe. They take stock of the situation with others in the same situation. So, for example, did everyone in the class score poorly on the test? So there's a curve. Did they make a silly mistake that they can correct next time, so they know, okay, this is not such a big problem? And then the last step, the P, they need to proceed mindfully. They need to stay calm and in control and ask, what do I want from this situation? So, for example, they figured out what's going wrong, and then they walk up to the teacher and they figure out, how do I fill these gaps so that I understand for next time, for next test, that I can pick it back up and be good? But sometimes emotions don't subside, and we do need to have some distraction techniques to help us calm down for just a moment. Things like playing music, coloring, watching funny videos, all are fantastic things. But it's important to mention that we don't want to let these distractions turn into avoidance, turn into repression, turn into things that we're just trying to push away as far as we can, because we know that if you try to push things away and not address them, eventually they will come back to haunt us. And then one last plug for self-care. Don't forget to give your body a fighting chance. Sleep, nutrition, enjoyment time, relaxation, all of it are needed for us to be our best selves. So don't forget that that is so, so key. And then practicing this emotional regulation skill, validation, which I think was talked about on the poll everywhere thing. So validation is listening with interest. It's using that reflective listening of what I hear you saying is. It's connecting with eye contact and even perhaps touch if it's felt appropriate. And it's finding that kernel of truth in the emotion. It's giving them a chance for them to understand that you care about them and you're listening to them and you really do care about the outcome. What validation is not cheerleading. It's not just unprompted, just yay, rah, rah. It's not turning to logic and rational thinking because often they're not going to be thinking rationally in that moment. It's not fixing. I think a lot of parents really do see their child struggle and they want to fix, but the answer is oftentimes the situation doesn't need to be fixed. It just needs to be sat with for a second so they can understand and take stock of the situation and go from there. It's not comparing ourselves to them. It's not agreeing. Again, it's just giving them that support that they need. So, in summary, I started it and I will finish with it. The adolescent brain is an amazing thing. It can bridge to successful adulthood, but those same factors bring risk. By being supportive and consistent with our responses, teens have that best chance at understanding what's expected and needed of by them. It increases an understanding they will be accepted in their shortcomings and they should accept others for theirs. Caregivers are the most important role models for their children, and they can show how skills like emotional regulation and validation are important. And the higher the likelihood that they will use these skills are, the more you are using them, the more likely they are to use them. So learning is a lifelong journey. It may be difficult as time goes on, but it's never too late. But we also should strike while the iron is hot.